That's what Wayne said. Okay.
Good afternoon. It is August 4th. This is Mike Vandervoort, and we're bringing Drive Through HR back from our July summer hiatus. William and Crystal and Nisha and I all took some much-needed time off so that we could just focus on our regular. We also have a bit of news that I'm going to spring here in a minute, but not a big secret, but we've been talking about it, but I want to lay it out for people that are listening. But first, let me welcome to the show Stephen Rothberg. Stephen, good afternoon. How are you today?
I am good, Mike. Thank you.
Thanks for being the you know, the initial guest as we come back from the annual Drive Through HR hiatus. We took almost all of July off, and so you know you're coming back in. And I know you told me William scheduled you a couple months ago, and we've been playing shenanigans on our end for a while. So it's good to have you back. You and I have met a couple times, but mostly we connect online. So tell me what's going on. Well, first, give us your bio. Tell us who Stephen Rothberg is and what you do, and then tell us what's going on right now with you.
Sure, no problem. So I am the founder of College Recruiter. It's an interactive media company that helps mostly employers hire college and university students and recent graduates. One of the things that we do is we have a niche job board, collegerecruiter.com. We also do targeted emails, virtual career events, data and analytics work, where we help our clients sort of better understand which schools they should go to, the kinds of students they should target, et cetera. So what's going on right now, we're into August, and so this is the start of our real busy season. From about the end of August until about the end of March, that's kind of the peak of campus recruiting for most larger organizations. So it's exciting.
So now you guys do a couple, and we're supposed to try to do something in Atlanta at one time, and that kind of fell by the wayside. But you guys go to shows, and you also plan your own events, right? And you kind of,
yeah.
Can you kind of lay out what your shtick is with college recruiting for us, how you work and sort of the services you offer?
Yeah, no problem. So most of our clients know us from sort of our core product, which is collegerecruiter.com, the niche job board. Employers will advertise their job openings on our site just like they would on, say, a Career Builder or an Indeed or just about any other job board. Unlike a lot of our competitors, which target individual schools, they'll provide essentially job board software to a college career service office. And if an employer posts a job, that job is only accessible to students who go to that school, and typically only the currently enrolled students, because once you've graduated, very unlikely that you're going to use your career service office. We also do some other things that are a little bit unusual for companies in our space, virtual career events, which a lot of people call virtual career fairs. You can have one for one company, or we can do them for, say, six different companies that are all looking to recruit cybersecurity specialists. And then they have booths kind of like they would at a job fair. Another thing that I think you're alluding to is the events that we host and organize, which we call college recruiting boot camps. And those events are typically hosted by one of our clients or another organization that we work with a lot. They'll kind of open up their doors for half a day or a day, and the attendees are all talent acquisition professionals, no vendors, no career services, no job seekers. And we get people together for a half or full day, dozens, sometimes a couple of hundred, and senior VPs of HR, college relation managers, et cetera, and they'll discuss different issues. Kind of depends upon the venue and the exact topic. We've got one coming up in a little under 4 weeks in Boulder, Colorado, for example, where we're going to be talking about how organizations can better recruit computer security and cybersecurity specialists. Another college recruiting boot camp that we have on the calendar is for the end of September. at the downtown San Francisco headquarters of Twilio. And we're going to be talking there about how organizations can recruit LGBT candidates, specifically students and recent grads. So that one obviously has got a real diversity theme.
Nice. We, you know, Will from Twilio, I think, is going to be on later in the month. I don't know the date exactly. We're still setting up the schedule. And we did, I don't know if you got a chance to hear it, but we did an LGBT-themed show at the end of June, and it happened to coincide. Franny Oxford was the last guest in that week on Friday, and William interviewed her, and that was the day the Supreme Court decision came out, you know, kind of making gay marriage a national law standard for being legal. So it was really quite a day, I think. But we had some really interesting guests on, and one of them, a transgender woman, talked about the difficulties of transgender folks in finding employment, and lots of stuff. So if people haven't listened to those shows, there's quite a bit of conversation around that from in the archives. Not to pitch away from your stuff, but it's interesting it's all over the place right now. And so Steve, thanks for that rundown. Listen, in the pre-show we talked. Drive-through is kind of going in a new direction, which we'll talk about in just a second. But what you do, you know, as I was sitting here, what I was thinking is you help, you know, work with interns, you work with new college students coming out. You're at that intersection of where people are starting their, just launching their career, you know, trying to find their first steps, if you will, as they come out of college. How do they enter HR? How do they enter the business world? Lots of opportunities to try new things, lots of opportunities to make mistakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, how do you help guide your folks? I mean, as they, with these services, what kind of things do you tell an intern or do you tell a new grad as they're going into the world? What can you give us a couple of pointers there? And then I'm going to come back to the drive-through theme.
Yeah, no problem. So, you know, we all make mistakes every day. We all make multiple mistakes every day. I probably make more than most people, and mine are probably more serious than most people. But some of it's how you recover, and you try not to make the same mistakes over and over and over again. But, you know, when it comes to advising the candidates that use our site or other services, one of the things that we really pride ourselves on is that we're very passionate about the candidate experience, whether that candidate is actually on collegerecruiter.com or whether they're on the website of one of our employers, whether they're working with career services, but however they're doing it. We work with a couple of million students and recent grads a year, and so, you know, we're able to communicate with them about things that they're doing. And what strikes me over and over and over again are that those of us who are older, I'm a Gen Xer, we work with most of our clients are Gen Xers or boomers, is that there's this prevailing attitude that these students and recent grads, that there are generational differences, that somebody who's 22 behaves differently than somebody who's 42 or 62 simply because of them being a different generation. I think in almost all cases, that's a bunch of BS. The differences, the mistakes that we see 22-year-olds making are the same mistakes that 42-year-olds made and 62-year-olds made when they were 22. It's not being properly prepared for an interview. It's having spelling mistakes on your resume. It's not coming into work at, you know, the proper time, putting forth the right effort, making sure that whatever you do in the workplace is for the benefit of the employer, right? So things like texting while you're in a meeting. Okay, a 42-year-old and a 62-year-old, they didn't do that when they were 22. But if they had cell phones when they were 22, I can guarantee you they would have. So to tut-tut those 22-year-olds for texting while they were in a meeting, I think that's misguided. I think if you were to look at that 42-year-old 20 years ago and look at what they were doing in a meeting, they were probably writing notes and passing it to the guy next to them. They were daydreaming. They were doodling. You know, whatever the actual behavior was, they still weren't paying attention to their boss when she was presenting something. And that was wrong then. It's wrong now. So, you know, those are some of the mistakes that we see that are really common. We also see mistakes on the flip side of it. One thing that I think is really low-hanging fruit, but very few organizations in our space do it, is to really set the expectations of their interns. Almost all of the Fortune 1000 that have internship programs now will recruit the bulk of those candidates or try to recruit the bulk of those interns and convert them into permanent employees upon graduation. The goal of an internship program should be to hire your future generation of leaders. So if you don't retain those interns, if you don't convert them into permanent hires upon graduation, then you failed. Then your internship program is a failure. But what is remarkable to me is how few of the employers directly communicate that to the interns. So if you're going to extend a job offer, an internship, an opportunity for somebody to intern with you, you should say to them, we would love to bring you on board as an intern. However, the goal of our program is for you to work for us full-time upon graduation. If we bring you on board as an intern and you like us and we like you, is that something that you think would be likely? And then remind them of that during their internship. A lot of students just have this complete disconnect. They have no reason to know that the goal of the internship program is to create future generations of leaders for that company. And so they go and work for 3 months and they think that they're done. And they're not done. They're only starting. So, you know, I think that that's something that too many employers do, that they could do better with very, very little extra work.
Yeah. I've not personally had like a lot of interns that work directly for me. Oddly enough, through a, you know, almost a 30-year career, I've had a few, but I've been around companies that used interns, and it, you know, there used to be this mentality that interns were like free summer help, not free per se. I mean, you might pay them, but they were just there to get something done, and then, you know, you got them out of there, and they went back to school. Thanks for dropping by, and I don't think that was the right relationship, and it often made it hard to find useful work for them because they wanted them to be glorified paper filers or whatever. And those definitely were, you know, opportunities that were fails as well, I think, at different times that I've seen. But hopefully that's changed a lot. I mean, there's, you know, we could do probably a whole hour on interns and pay and all that kind of stuff. But we're about halfway through the show. I was going to just take a look here at the studio. We're actually 14 minutes in. My clock and my phone clock and the clock on Blog Talk Radio are all in different time zones. Apparently, they're about a minute and 30 seconds apart. But let me do a quick reset, and then let me do a quick mention of this format change we're going to do on drive-through, and then we'll swing back. So welcome to anyone who just dropped in and listening. This is Mike Vandervoort. It's August 4th on Drive-Thru HR, and this is our first show coming back online on a daily basis after taking the month of July off. I know I had a great month. It was busy. I was able to focus on other work. I didn't really go on vacation, but it was nice to not, you know, just have a little bit of break from the daily grind of the show. William, Nisha, and Crystal, I'm sure, would echo and will echo the same things when they come on and do their shows. But we booked Steven a while back, and so we're in the midst of a thing here at Drive-Thru. We've been on the air about 4 years, and we had a meeting. The Drive-Thru staff had a meeting in Dallas back in the first part of June, and what we found was we felt like we were all bored with the format that we've been following since Brian Wempen first lost the show, which was basically have an HR practitioner on, talk to him, give him an easy forum to chat in, and ask him three questions. The questions were, what keeps you up at night, what's top of mind, and what's next. It made for an easy flow. It was an easy script. And we think it got old. And we're going to talk more about this, and we're in the process of doing some rebranding of our websites and stuff. But we're going to move to a new theme, and it's kind of starting with a slow roll with Steven. So thanks for letting me do this on your time and dime a little bit, Steven. But we're going to talk we're going to talk about, we're going to switch the format, and we're actually going to do a show with all four of us in the middle of the month where we talk about this, but the theme is going to switch from what keeps you up at night to how did you learn, and we're going to try to take the theme of failure, which is not something that we talk about a lot, you know, at work. I mean, you don't generally embrace your failures. Everybody, especially social media or professionally, you want to be seen as successful. You want to be seen as a leader. You want to be seen as innovative. But we're only that because we try stuff and we fail and we learn. So Crystal Miller had a quote, and I don't know if she wrote it or if she stole it, but it was, from failure we learn, and from failure successes are born. And that kind of reflects the show. We're not going to talk about failure and how you screwed up, but what we want to talk to people about in our guests going forward will be failure, whether that was at work or in social media, that led to a learning for you. And so we're going to ask people to come on the show and talk about something that they tried that was not their best moment, but how did they rebound from that? What did they learn, and how did it make them better? So we're going to explore themes of failure, learning, and success. And I think, Stephen, I appreciate you did a great job talking about, you know, how some people repeat mistakes and all that kind of stuff. You know, that one generation isn't really that different. They might have a different tool to use or a different toy to play with, but really we make the same mistakes over and over again, is kind of what I heard you saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, too many people make mistakes over and over again. They don't take the opportunity to kind of like sit down and examine why something didn't work out. And right, it's not about pointing fingers at yourself or your coworkers or your spouse or whatever. To me, it's more a matter of, well, let's identify what went wrong so that you can see if there's anything you can do to prevent that from happening again. Sometimes there's not. And sometimes it's just the way things work out. But sometimes there is. You know, you're in a car accident, and maybe you have to look back and say, you know what, I was speeding. I was tired when I was driving. So I'm not going to speed again. I'm not going to be tired when I'm driving again. Or I hired the wrong person. Why did I hire them? Because I really liked them as a person. And I thought that we could create a great job around that person. More times than not, that doesn't work out either. They don't have the right skill set for your organization, and that's something we can all learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're in now about 15 minutes. You said that you've been an entrepreneur for a while, and you don't become a successful entrepreneur very often the first time out. But you said you make mistakes all the time. Did you? And you said you thought you might have an example. Do you have a story that you'd be willing to share with us?
Yeah, you bet. So, I've talked about this publicly, and including with the person who's sort of at the heart of it. He always gets a chuckle out of it, and I do too. But it was painful at the time. So I started the company in 1991. We were doing things like printing or publishing employment magazines that were distributed through hundreds of college career service offices. When the internet essentially came into being in the mid-90s, we went online. We added our website in 1996. And I think roughly 2 years later, maybe 98, it might have been 99, Jerry Crispin and Mark Mailer had a book, a series, and they published it every year. And they own a company called Career Crossroads, Career X, and then the word Rhodes. And they published this book that was kind of like the Bible of the job board industry. Way back when there were hundreds of job boards worldwide, and now there are probably 100,000, they reviewed practically every job board. And College Recruiter was one of the sites that they reviewed. And they talked about traffic and how many jobs we had and features and pricing and just, you know, the usual kind of stuff that you would think. And then Jerry wrote a line there that really cut to the core and really pointed out a mistake that I was making over and over and over again and didn't realize the significance of it. But he said something to the effect of that our marketing materials, I can't remember exactly how he put it, but it's basically overpromised and underdelivered. That we were excessively promoting ourselves, being too aggressive in what we were claiming we could do. And, you know, initially that really hurt. Here is a book that was on the shelf of a lot of our clients and a lot of potential clients. The review was mostly positive, except for that one line, which was very accurate and really hurtful. But it was hurtful not because of anything that was inaccurate that Jerry had written. It was hurtful because it's like, man, that is wrong, and that's something that we need to change, that I need to change. So that was a real eye-opener to me, and I think that I've done a pretty good job of much more accurately describing the response rate that employers should see if they use our site, that candidates should see if they use our site. We try hard to under-promise and over-deliver. And you know, Jerry was basically saying, you know what, if you're good, you don't need to shout that you're good from the top of the mountain. You can tell people the results that they should get, and if the results are good, they'll keep coming back to you, and they'll tell more people. So that was a really great piece of advice. That really, I think, helped to square us away in how we communicated about the work that we do.
Okay. Did Jerry in subsequent years they lighten up? Were there better reviews, or did they do that again? What was the outcome?
I think it's funny. I think that may have been the last time they published that book. So
that sucks. So you
that's
got to,
okay. I
learn the lesson, but you didn't get the feedback later on about the improvement, right?
Yeah, I don't think that there was any redeeming review in a subsequent issue, if that's what you mean. But that's okay. You know, it was really fair what he wrote. It was completely accurate. And, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, you sometimes hear from your friends or family members. You know, you hear about an intervention where if you don't realize you have a problem, then you can't really correct it. And that was incredibly helpful. So, you know, nobody likes a braggart. You know, it's one thing to say, hey, these are the results we get and they're good, you know, show that the results are good and maybe talk about what other people or other organizations in the industry are seeing and let the results speak for themselves. If your results aren't good, then don't lie about it. Don't tell everybody that you have the best mousetrap if it's a piece of crap.
And I think in today's world, it's a lot easier to get caught or outed if you do that than it used to be. Because it was, you know, before social media, it was a lot less, things were a lot less transparent, in my opinion. And now, you know, if you're no good, it's like a restaurant, a bad restaurant opening in New York City. If you're no good, you know, you'll get called out pretty quickly and you won't last, I think. What I heard you say, Stephen, was that, you know, Jerry wrote a thing, you took some knocks from a guy who's pretty well respected in the industry, you looked at him hard and you kind of took him to heart and you fixed him, right? You sort of went back and said, let's do that. And that's whether you call that a failure or you just call it getting called out, it sounds like even though you didn't get a follow up review with a Jerry Crispin stamp of approval on it, you still personally took a heart, right? I mean, and it sounds like you used that experience, which is what we're trying to talk about with this theme. It's like you used that to build a better product, you know, present your business in a more honest and accurate light, and actually, you know, there was some growth there for you and the business, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it would be very, very akin to if your boss, like when you were back at Publix,
right?
And your boss said, you know, hey, Mike, here's our semi-annual review of your performance, and you know, I looked at these different factors, and I took into account, you know, your self review and whatever, and you know, I think, you know, on balance, you've been good, and we have no intention of getting rid of you. This isn't about terminating you or anything. This is about helping you be better. But you know what, Mike? One of the things that you're doing is really a problem, and it's really hurting you. And here it is, right? And you look at that and you say, yeah, you know what? She's right. This is a failure. This is something that I'm doing that is not appropriate or isn't up to what I should be doing. Like I need to get better at this. You take that to heart, you fix that, and then you come back 6 months later and she says, yeah, you know what? You're good in that area now. You know, pat on the back. That's kind of the experience that I had with the Career Crossroads review. And it was great. I think that it was tough love, and it really enabled us to grow and focus on the you know, not just the message about what we do, but actually what we do. Make the product good, make our services good, and then let the results speak for themselves. And clearly, we still mess up every day. Every organization does. But I think it was a little bit of looking in the mirror and not seeing not liking what you see and doing something about it. So hopefully we all have the opportunity to do that.
So you have to be willing to. What I hear you saying is you have to be willing to listen. You have to be willing to acknowledge that you can't, that you actually are capable of making a mistake, and you have to be able to step up and address those things that, you know, may not be endearing you to someone or may not allowing you to be as good as you could be.
Yeah, it's kind of a little mini Jerry Crispin 12-step program, if you will.
Jerry Crispin 12-step. I love it. And at the end, if you succeed, maybe he gives you a hat, like a signed hat. That would be awesome. We have about 2.5 minutes left. I asked you to tell a story. I'm not going to tell a long story. I'm just going to say this because I just don't think it's fair to ask, you know, somebody to talk about, you know, a mistake without sharing. I worked, you know, up at your neck of the woods, Steve, and I worked for Anderson Windows years ago. And when I got hired into Anderson, it was as part of a merger, and I had a boss who was probably the most open individual when it came to sharing, you know, corporate information, giving you the inside perspective on what was going on, what was likely to happen, things that I thought really helped make me much more effective in my HR role, because you could anticipate better. He retired. He took a buyout and went on to another opportunity, and they put me in with another guy at Anderson who is my new boss. And he was much more typical corporate guy. He kept stuff closer to the vest, and it really pissed me off. It was really annoying to me that I no longer had that insider access, right? And I wound up in a performance appraisal getting talked to about that and had to listen and learn how to recalibrate myself to be a better subordinate to him, because that wasn't his style. So, you know, and if I had not been able to make that adjustment, I wouldn't have been able to have the great relationship I had with that guy later on. We're down to the last 52 seconds. So thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for letting us kind of shift gears up. Tell us, tell people where they can find you on the Twitters and everything, and then let's...
Yeah. No problem. So Twitter handle is @StephenRothberg. That account is targeted primarily to our employer clients. And we have a second account that's primarily targeted to job seekers, and that is @EntryLevelJob, J-O-B, no S on the end of that. Somebody else grab that one first. I'm LinkedIn, Facebook, you know, just find me there. My last name is spelled R-O-T-H, B as in Bravo, E-R-G. Anybody wants to message me, you know, directly through LinkedIn or whatever, great. I'm also happy if somebody wants to drop me an email and has any, you know, questions, concerns, whatever. My email address is Steven, S-T-E-V-E-N, @collegerecruiter.com.
Thanks for being on the show. I can't tell if we have stream left or if we've already stopped, but I'm going to roll us out to some stock music, hip-hop. And you have a great afternoon, and we'll talk again soon, Stephen. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
My pleasure, Mike. Thanks for the opportunity.